Today on Courage.
I was 18 years old and I woke up in the emergency room one morning. My mother said she found me lying on the floor. I wasn't breathing, I was gurgling.
Dreams of college and independence, gone. How epilepsy put one man's dreams on hold.
I became very withdrawn. I would hide my seizures from my mother because she was hovering. She was a helicopter parent at that time, really. Mm-hmm. I couldn't take a shower with the bathroom door closed because she was so afraid I would have a seizure in the bathroom.
See Rick's courageous transition from depression and doubt to hope and confidence.
I was fighting my sexuality and I was fighting my epilepsy to where it was just, I was angry all the time. Mm-hmm. But I just did what I needed to do to get through at the time, and I finally came to terms with who I was, and I finally came to terms with I have epilepsy.
All this and more today on Courage. Hello and welcome to Courage. I'm Brenda Snow. I hope all of you are ready for another powerful story of hope and inspiration. There are many stigmas surrounding those living with a chronic medical condition, but few stigmas are as severe as those faced by people living with epilepsy. Whether it's people's fears and misconceptions, or even outdated notions of demonic possession. Believe me, I've heard it all. And epilepsy gets a bad rap. But it's more common than you might think. Millions of Americans have epilepsy, and it's one of the most common neurological disorders. Epilepsy is no barrier to achieving great things, and my guest today, well, he's no exception. Rick has come a long way on his journey with epilepsy, and his story is one of overcoming stigmas and learning to accept yourself. Let's take a look. When did you have your first seizure? What did it feel like?
I was 18 years old, 1992. I was just home from college for the weekend, and I woke up in the emergency room one morning. My mother said she found me lying on the floor. I wasn't breathing. I was gurgling. It was very traumatizing, actually.
And it sounds like that first seizure might have been a tonic-clonic seizure.
Yes, full-blown tonic-clonic.
Yeah, which I think, you know, old-school people used to say, what?
Grand mal.
Yeah, okay. So tonic-clonic, and then what did they tell you? You were just laying there? Did they say, hey, you have epilepsy, or was it, we don't know what you have?
I wish it was that simple. They didn't know. They did a spinal tap looking for any kind of substance abuse or just any infections in my body. It took about a month. Maybe a month and a half before the doctors finally diagnosed me as having epilepsy.
So when they say the words, hey, Rick, you have epilepsy, were you like,
oh, yes. I mean, there was immediately my mind flashed of people lying on the floor with a wooden spoon in their mouth or somebody sticking a wallet in their mouth. That was the first thing my mind flashed to was the old school fake seizures you saw on television, which in 1992, the internet was not the tool it is today.
Yeah. What did you do next?
I kind of lived the next few months just in a haze. I had to quit school and move back to the safety of my parents' home.
Because?
Because I could, if I was having seizures uncontrolled at college, it was too big of a risk.
How many seizures a day were you having at that time?
We thought it was only like two or three a day, but after I learned more about the many types of seizures, I was probably having up to a dozen a day. Mm.
So when you moved home, obviously that's probably tough for a guy in his early 20s.
I mean, I waited 18 years to get away. I get away for 6 months and I have to come back.
So what was that like emotionally?
The depression really started to set in. I became very withdrawn. I would hide my seizures from my mother because she was hovering. She was a helicopter parent at that time, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, she was hovering and watching, you know, everything that I was doing, everything that I was eating, how long I was sleeping, you know, was I okay? I couldn't take a shower with the bathroom door closed because she was so afraid I would have a seizure in the bathroom, in the shower. I finally went through, like I said, what my mother calls my rebellious phase.
And what did rebellion mean?
Moving away from mom, for one, which I moved in with my sister, so it wasn't that rebellious. But
so you went to the sister's house, then what happened?
She stepped up and stepped in, and I didn't feel like I was being mothered since it was my sister. Mm-hmm. But I went through a phase of also partying and staying out late. And during this point in my life, my late teens, early 20s, I was coming to terms with my sexuality. Mm-hmm. I'm a gay man today, but I was fighting that. I was fighting my sexuality, and I was fighting my epilepsy to where it was just, I was angry all the time. Mm-hmm. but I just did what I needed to do to get through at the time. And I finally came to terms with who I was, and I finally came to terms with I have epilepsy.
Well, I want to know, how did you, you know, the show is called Courage. That's why you're here, because you're so courageous. How did you find the courage to deal with epilepsy, and how did you find the courage to come out?
They kind of go hand in hand. I read a book by Greg Louganis, Breaking the Surface.
Mm-hmm. He was
gay Olympian. Mm-hmm. I read that book and I thought, if he can do this and be a public figure, and this takes so much bravery and everything, why can't I do this? I'm just nobody. I'm just a face in the crowd. Why can't I find this courage? So I came out to my high school girlfriend, and she welcomed me wholeheartedly.
That's
no
awesome.
Questions.
That's awesome.
And to this day, she's one of my best friends. I'm her children's godfather.
Mm.
And I mean, I love and adore her, and she fixed me up on my first gay date.
She did? So what did you tell her?
What if he finds out I have epilepsy? What if he finds out I have epilepsy?
Oh, so you... Yeah. So this is really interesting. So you overcame that hurdle.
Yes.
To go on the date and say, I'm a homosexual man, but then epilepsy became your biggest worry.
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, to where, and you know, as a relationship progresses, eventually you're going to have a sleepover.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I was horrified of spending the night, because most of my seizures throughout my life have been nocturnal.
Sure.
And I was horrified of that next step in the relationship. Eventually we got there, and it was luckily one of my seizure-free nights.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt this overwhelming sense of guilt. I have to tell this guy. I have to tell him. I finally told him, and I think that was the last time I saw him.
It was the last time you saw him.
It's at that time, it was still this demon, you know, this demonic thing. And when someone had epilepsy, they had no idea what it truly was.
Do you think that's changing? The demon stigma of epilepsy?
I do. It's nothing to be afraid of. When I have a seizure, if I have a tonic-clonic seizure, I can drop to the floor, I can gurgle, I'll stop breathing, but it is absolutely impossible to swallow your tongue. That's a big myth. No one can swallow their tongue. Do not try to put anything in my mouth. I've busted my teeth, about all of them, from people trying to put something in my mouth, or just the clenching part. You'll see blood coming from my mouth, because more than likely I'll bite my tongue or the inside of my cheek. I'm not swallowing my tongue. The number one thing would be to roll me onto my side. Therefore, I won't choke or anything like that, but just be patient with me. I will come out of it. Nine times out of 10, there's no need to call, you know, the emergency. Or call 911 or
anything. And when would be the time I should know to call 911?
If I've been seizing for over a minute or 2 minutes continuously, that would be a good time. And then afterwards, I will be very disoriented. I'll try to get up. I'll try to move around. That's when I can hurt myself the worst. And I have. I've fallen into tables. I've fallen into lamps and into windows and stuff. Just try to keep me down and calm. Try to keep me, you know, as comfortable as possible, and don't get right in my face. You know, don't be right up here going, are you okay? Are you okay?
Mm-hmm.
No, because that will scare me even more, because my eyes are dilated.
There's some confusion.
Very,
too.
Very much. A lot of confusion, a lot of disorientation. I might not be able to speak right away. My breathing will be very sporadic. My heartbeat will be very sporadic. But just be there, be quiet, hold my hand.
I think that's good advice. Mm-hmm. Any experiences as you've gone out and provided epilepsy education, is there any kind of a profound experience or a moment, like a person that you'll never forget or they'll never forget you?
At one conference, I can't remember, it was a couple years ago, there was a little guy, and he reminded me so much of myself. He was sitting there with his mother. He still had acne, you know, probably 16, 17. And he just looked so beat down at that age already. And I saw myself in him. And I saw his mother, you know, she's constantly watching his plate. She's watching everything he's doing. And after the conference, I went and spoke with him. And he told me a little bit about his story. He'd been in a bad car accident the year he got his driver's license.
Mm.
And he'd already, you know, his driver's license had already been taken away from him. But he's found the medications to, you know, keep his seizures under control. He still has an occasional seizure here and there, but he just looked at me and he started, I mean, tears welled up in his eyes, and he says, "I just want to drive again." And I mean, I felt so sad and so helpless for him, because he felt his freedom had been taken away, because we all strive for 16 years, you know, I mean, that's our goal, to get those driver's license. And once you get them, to have them taken away, it really broke my heart. But I had to tell him, I was like, "Don't give up." I said, "You're on the right path. You're here today. You're trying to educate yourself more." So he was well on his way to seizure, maybe not seizure freedom, but
control.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we should all strive for, yeah, in the epilepsy community, is control. And only you can create that control. It took me a long time to figure that out, that the doctors, they have a hand in it, but you have to, you know, they can't do it all for you. They're not with you at home, yeah, and behind closed doors. So you play a big part in that.
You do. Well, I think you are probably one of my favorite people ever. Mm. It's so,
thank you, darling,
inspirational. And I love you.
I love you. And thank you so much for having me here today.
My pleasure. You got to come back and stay healthy and keep being courageous.
Thank you.
Wow, what a great story Rick has. And well, you could tell, I love Rick. So what did he teach us? What did I learn? Don't ignore your health issues. Addressing them can often have rippling, positive, great effects. So that's important. And always remember, there's hope. And that's what I hope Courage does. Give you that hope that even if you've been living with a chronic condition for years, you're not alone. Another key takeaway, if you're not happy with your doctor, find a new one. You want a healthcare team that is working for you. And finally, I know that I've been challenged with this over the years, and like Rick, I needed to learn how to accept help from others. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you want to see more stories of courage, head over to courage.tv. You can watch past episodes and stay up to date on future shows. Now be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're always looking for amazing people to be on this show. So if you have a courageous story, I'd love to hear it. Please email me at brenda@courage.tv. So from everyone here at Courage, see you next time. Keep watching and remember, be courageous.